Kane is in the building.
Weather's getting nicer, basketball season's heating up, baseball's around the corner. You know what that means. It's time to win some cash. OP Sportsbook launches in late spring and will provide a fully encrypted and anonymous betting platform where users will bet with stable cryptocurrency. This means that they can place bets with crypto without having to worry about the volatility of crypto. Powered by the Solana blockchain and Web3 technology, opsportsbook.com represents the future of sports betting. 3Pete is proud to partner with them, and always remember to bet responsibly. That's opsportsbook.com.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to another episode of the 3Pete Podcast, episode 8 of season 5. We have another great episode lined up for you today, folks. We got a nice healthy balance of all three sports and all the latest news within those sports. For this week's episode, I'm your host, Alex Castle, and as always, I have the pleasure of being joined by
Josh Bromowitz.
And filling in for Stevie B is the one, the only man of many hats, Mr. TJ Hummel. TJ, a pleasure as always.
Pleasure is mine, gentlemen. Thank you for having me, as always.
I felt it was only appropriate to give you a special introduction, as you are a very special member of this team. So great to have you on for today's episode.
Hey, greatly appreciated. Let's get this rocking and rolling.
And of course, what better way to start an episode with the man of many hats than to talk some football? We had some action in football this week with some very interesting trades. Russell Wilson finally leaving Seattle, heading to Denver. That definitely took me by surprise. But I think the more surprising was Carson Wentz getting traded to the NFC least. Now he's going to be with the Washington Commanders. That's going to be very interesting, TJ. We might have to get into that.
It's just surprising to hear you call them the Commanders now. I'll be honest, I was used to saying Washington football team finally.
I was thinking WFT. It's stuck. That's it. But Commanders, it may grow on me, but I digress.
I'm not fully prepared to refer to them as the Commanders yet, but for the purposes of this show, I do have to refer to them as that. What other big trades do we got going on? Khalil Mack heading to the Chargers. He's going to be paired with Bosa now on that D-line. That's going to be very nasty.
And Amari Cooper just today.
And Amari Cooper to the land. Baker Mayfield could be a little more dangerous now. We'll get into all of these trades right now, and that's what we'll start off with. So, Josh, we'll start off with you. A lot has happened with these trades. I mean, a lot of names were just thrown around going to some locations that we probably didn't expect. What was the trade that either, you know, caught you the most by surprise, or a trade that you actually can see being very beneficial that some people might not think is a good move at this time?
The trade that really caught my eye the most, I mean, obviously the obvious answer is the Russell Wilson trade. That's a given. But for me, I look at the Khalil Mack trade because we look at Russell Wilson going to the Broncos in the AFC West. That's already a loaded division led by Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Derek Carr was in the playoffs this year. Now you add Russell Wilson to the mix. You need defense to stop these quarterbacks. You mentioned Joey Bosa on their defense. They have Derwin James, but their defense was somewhat thin this year. You add in a guy like Khalil Mack, that's going to be a fun edge rush for the Chargers and a nightmare for these quarterbacks.
I think this division now is going to be one of the most interesting, not only with each team's quarterback, but they all have their different pieces within defense. Max Crosby just signing a huge extension with Vegas.
Tyrann Mathieu being a free agent for the Chiefs.
It's going to be very interesting. And now I saw this post on Facebook, and I'm going to open this up to both of you before we get into what TJ's trade of the week was. But someone had a very hot take that in that division, going into next season, Russell Wilson is the worst quarterback in that division. And I'm curious to see if you what you guys think of this take. I know it's probably ridiculous, but we do like to debate the hot takes on this show.
As crazy as it might sound, that person does have a fair point in the sense that we know what we're going to get from Pat Mahomes. We know we're going to see greatness. That's a given. And it looks like Justin Herbert is on the rise as well. So I think it's safe to say that that already eliminates two of those. I really like what I've been seeing from Derek Carr. I've been seeing improvement. The only thing that really concerns me is he has a new coach next year, and his coach hasn't had success being a head coach before. So that worries me. But Russell Wilson also, I don't feel so safe counting on him, because it seems like in the last couple of years, whether he was checked out or he wasn't happy or something, he just hasn't looked like the same explosive Russell Wilson that we are so accustomed to the last 5 or so years prior. Is he the worst? I really don't know. But it's not like it's that ridiculous of a take, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. It's just crazy to see how his name is being affiliated with worst in his division just because this is Russell Wilson. I mean, we've seen what he did in Seattle, the Super Bowls, all of these other accolades. So, TJ, when I posed this question, I saw your reaction. So I'm very curious to see what your thoughts are on this this spicy take, as you would say.
Oh yeah, it's definitely very spicy. I think I have to agree with Josh. It's gonna come down to Russ and Derek Carr in that division with who's gonna be the bottom of the barrel, if you will. I personally love Russ, I do, but I think in the division right now he could be the worst quarterback just because he's going into a brand new system with a new head coach, if I'm not mistaken. And I think in general, we all know Russ's greatness. I mean, we've seen him struggle the last couple of years. Now that could be the fact that the offensive line couldn't block the wind for him in Seattle, or if it was injuries or just being not happy or clashing with Pete Carroll or whatever it is. But I think at the end of the day, we actually agree on something here.
Took long enough. You finally are coming to the right side for once.
Or I'm just starting to use my brain more. Who knows? But we agree, and that's one of the firsts here on 3P.
It's a beautiful moment, and we definitely do have to cherish it. But however, my next question, I know you're going to have a little bit of a different take on, which is, you know, we like our respective takes here at the 3P. Your trade of the week, whether it was the biggest surprise or a move that was a little bit of a head scratcher or a move that you think was the right move, what was that trade for you with this week?
It's funny you asked, because it refers to the last question you asked. My biggest trade was Russell Wilson going to the Broncos. And the Seahawks really didn't give up that much. It was Wilson and a fourth round draft pick in 2022. But the haul they got in return they have Drew Lock, Noah Fant, Shelby Harris, two first round picks, and two second round picks, and a fifth round pick in 2022. That's a lot for the Seahawks to build off of, especially because they now need a quarterback. And Drew Lock is Drew Lock, but I think he could be all right out there. But I love this for Denver because they finally have a quarterback since Peyton Manning retired. And that's something that they've been looking for ever since. And I think with the addition of Russ, it makes them a contender. But going back to what Fromm was saying, and I think you said it as well, Castle, that AFC West division is stacked now. There is so much talent in that division. I think it's going to be one of the hardest divisions in football, at least now this year. But I want to hear what you guys have to say, just if you have anything.
Yeah, here's my bold prediction, because it seems like we're all about bold prediction these days. Denver is going to be a 10-win team and finish the worst in their division.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous because, and I don't even know if that means if the Chiefs are going to be the ones representing out of their division. They probably will, but I don't want to count out the Raiders or the Chargers either. The Broncos, I feel like they're more than a quarterback away from being a contender. I think they still have a few pieces that they need to figure out. But it's tough.
I agree.
It's going to be a very interesting season for that division. I think it's really going to test Russell Wilson to see what he's got left in the tank, to see, you know, yeah, giving him the benefit of the doubt. It's going to be a little difficult, new system, new environment, but still at one time was one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he's going to compete with these other teams, not only with, you know, going back and forth with these other quarterbacks, but even these defenses. He's going to be put to the test. So I'm very excited about that. And as big of a shock as that trade was, and even Khalil Mack, I mean, all of these trades were shocking to me, but the one that I did not see coming was the one that went down today with Amari Cooper getting traded to Cleveland. He got sent over to Cleveland for a 2022 fifth round pick and a sixth round pick. Now, yes, he does fill the void of replacing Odell. Now they got a nice 1-2 combo again with him and Jarvis, and they've got a pretty decent tight end situation with Njoku and Hooper. But the biggest question mark for me with this trade is, how much is this really going to help Baker Mayfield? He's been battling his injuries. I feel like his performance these past few seasons has been a roller coaster with its ups and downs. He has these great games, and these other games he's throwing 2 to 3 interceptions. And yeah, Cleveland is giving up some later picks for Cooper, but they're still picks. And we've seen Cooper's stock decline a little bit now, given he wasn't really getting the ball as much as he could have, but still, I don't know if this was the answer for Cleveland. I mean, Amari Cooper is still a great receiver. I'm not saying that, but I don't know if he's really going to give them that extra boost. What do you guys think? Do you think that this is really going to give them the boost with Baker, or do you think they need to also explore their quarterback situation a little bit?
I think this is great for Cleveland because it shows that they're being aggressive going after Amari Cooper. And I think it's great for the fans of Cleveland because I think come training camp, they're going to have a new quarterback. and it's going to be Deshaun Watson.
That is a very, very bold take, but I like it. And that brings me up to what I was going to bring up next. Deshaun Watson will not be facing criminal charges. Houston will begin to explore trade options. The two options that I saw, or the top two teams, were Carolina and Philadelphia, but Cleveland in the mix. I like that. I mean, Stefanski is an offensive-minded quarterback, coach. So bringing in a quarterback like Watson, that could be very interesting.
And something to keep in mind with Deshaun Watson is he has a no-trade clause. So let's say Carolina offers him a trade. He doesn't need to accept that and go to Carolina. You've seen what Cam Newton and Sam Darnold did last year in the past few, couple of years. I don't know why he would want to consider going there if other teams like Cleveland or Philadelphia or Tampa Bay or the Saints offer a trade instead. So I would not count out the Browns being active in the trade market for Deshaun, because what have they seen from Baker Mayfield that's made them say, you know what, he's our franchise quarterback?
I'm on the same page with you. That's why, as much as I think Cooper is a good move for Cleveland, I don't know if it's enough to keep Baker there. Now, this is also interesting too. Per the many man of hats, Jarvis Landry was given permission to seek a trade. Now, and they save $15 million if they cut him. Now, if I'm Cleveland, I would try to trade him. Yeah, you're going to save the money, but you could still get something for Jarvis. Now, frankly, I think he'll end up getting traded. Not that this is a main factor, but I do believe that Odell leaving is going to have more of an impact in the end than people might think. But I just don't think he's had the success in Cleveland that he's wanted. And who knows, a team that's actually in a better, you know, position to go farther into the playoffs and the Super Bowl, he could be great. TJ, we've thrown around Cleveland, we've thrown around Carolina, we've thrown around Philly. Is there any other team that you think is in the mix for Watson?
Not particularly. I think the ones that you guys have mentioned are going to be his most likely destinations. I could see Philly making a big move for him because I don't think they can really rely on Jalen Hurts. But that's just my opinion. That's all I got to say.
It's going to be a very interesting next few weeks with football as moves continue to be made. Next week's show, we're going to have to dive into our Giants a little bit with the moves they've been making. Shep is returning with the restructured deal. Blake Martinez is returning with the restructured deal. Bradbury's the big question mark in that. And then we got to see what other moves we make. So definitely more to come with football. But now we got to switch to hoops, because there was a game that went down this week that I know someone has been itching to talk about. And that was the Nets walking in to the city of brotherly love. And they were the ones to feel the love at the end of the night, winning by 29 points. Even though he did not play, Ben Simmons was on the bench. And you know what? I have to admit, I liked what I saw from him as a teammate. He was, you know, dapping guys up, pulling them aside, talking defense. He was looking like a player again. And even though I don't have much of an opinion, good or bad, on Simmons, I was happy to see that. And I know, Josh, you were ecstatic to see that. So this game, 29 points. I did not expect the Nets to really win by that much going into this game. What was, I mean, aside from the scoring, of course, because all the key guys were hitting their shots. What was the big key for them to win by such a large amount?
I mean, there's so much that I could talk about with this game. You have people saying, oh, it's just a regular season game. But that's not the case. Everyone knows deep down this was more than a game. It really did feel like a playoff game, and it felt like a playoff victory more so. The Nets go into the most hostile environment in Philadelphia, and it was the most expensive ticket in Philadelphia in over 10 years, playoffs included. Ben Simmons returned to Philly, and he heard it all. The booing, the cursing. Fans got thrown out of the arena because of how violent they got. Everything you could think of in Philly happened because it's Philly. What else is there to say? What I was really impressed with was our stars showing up on both ends of the floor. And what I mean by that is Kyrie Irving and James Harden, they had issues, and it was public knowledge once Harden got traded to Philadelphia that him and Kyrie did not see eye to eye. So what did Kyrie do? He accepted the challenge to guard James Harden the entire game, and he took it personally. Harden's comments, he shut him down. I believe Harden went 3 of 17 from the field. All three of those were made threes. The first time in his career, he went 0 for 10 on two-pointers. Harden ended the game with 11 points. Andre Drummond was another big factor. Joel Embiid made 5 shots, missing, I think, 12 shots, going 5 of 17 as well. He had 26 points, but most of those were on free throws in the first quarter. As a Net fan, I'm thrilled to see our defense step up, because that has been a struggle the last month and a half. We went from a mediocre defense to a terrible defense. But our team got stops in Philadelphia, and it was great to see. We had role players step up when they needed to. It was a revenge game for Seth Curry, his father-in-law on the court for Philadelphia, and Doc Rivers. He had Steph playing later in Golden State against Denver. It was very fitting. Seth Curry, I believe, had 23 points, 24 points. He was on fire. Kevin Durant couldn't miss. Kyrie couldn't miss. Patty Mills was huge. And then you had Ben Simmons on the bench, cheering, engaging in conversations, pulling the rookies aside to talk to them. It's everything you wanted to see in a vet. And if I'm Philadelphia, I'm very worried right now. Because from the start, it was very obvious that the 76ers traded a lot to get James Harden. And I've also been saying for the longest time as an F fan, just watching James Harden, he is not a good defender at all. He's very easy to pick on. He doesn't try on defense. And if he's not hitting his shots, he's really disengaged with any game. So then you kind of just leave Joel Embiid on an island to do all the work himself. And that's what we saw in Philadelphia. Joel Embiid had a decent game because he was able to get to the free throw line. But James Harden didn't get his cheap fouls that he was so accustomed to getting. Maxey couldn't do anything. Danny Green was out. Thibault isn't a shooter, so the Sixers, if I'm a Sixer fan, I'm worried with the way this team played, and more so heading into the playoffs, because you need depth, you need bench depth in the playoffs, because Embiid can't play 48 minutes a night. They don't have a backup center. James Harden can't have games like this, but if he does, I would say it's basically an automatic loss for Philly. So I love what I saw, and I'm even more happy that this happened to Philly, because I hate Philly and so do you boys. So that's all I got to say, but I'm sure you boys also have other comments on this game as well.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really, that game very clearly confirmed for me that Brooklyn won the trade. I think that Harden is a streaky player. I think that he's not fully committed. And I don't know what his deal is. I just want to add on.
After the game, you would think that he would, you know, go, like, he would be pissed off since Kyrie Irving locked him up. He got embarrassed losing to his own team. So what does he do? He goes out and celebrates with famous rappers. Goes to the strip club, which is who James Harden is. It really didn't seem like he cares. And I am very happy now that the Nets got rid of him, because we don't need to deal with that type of attitude. We want someone who cares. And it's very obvious that Philly painted this picture on Ben Simmons to basically be someone who he isn't. And yes, he did make some bad plays in Philadelphia when it mattered most. And I'm not denying any of that. But James Harden doesn't care. I haven't seen the last time he actually has cared about basketball. I haven't seen that emotion and fire in him since Houston. So, yeah, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, okay. No, that's exactly where I was going to get. Celebrating after the game. Maybe Doc Rivers will be the coach to finally whip him into shape. Who knows? But I agree. Very concerning as a Philadelphia fan, and they got a lot to watch out for. TJ, I know you caught the first half of this game. Like me, you're a non-Nets fan, but there's as a basketball fan, there's still a lot for you to take away, especially when your team's one of the top in the East right now. So what were your big takeaways from this game?
Well, one of my biggest takeaways is, like, a healthy KD and Kyrie when he can play, it's unstoppable. Any slander.
Unless if you play Boston and Jason Tatum decides to drop 54. And then
So, like, I'm not too concerned there. But my biggest takeaway is, that's the biggest one, at least for me, probably for you as well, Fromm. But my biggest, or one of my other biggest ones too, is seeing Seth Curry ball out. I don't exactly remember. I think he dropped, 27?
I think it was like 23 or 24.
Either way, in the 20s in points against his former team. What else can you expect there?
His father-in-law as well, not just his team.
I was very impressed with Seth Curry. He was hitting the shots he needed to. He was stepping up big when he needed to, and he was a good complement to KD and Kyrie. And just seeing how the Nets manhandled Philly and seeing James Harden perform and act the way he did post game, like, I was going to take it one step further and say I haven't seen fire or emotion out of Harden since he was in OKC with Russ and KD.
And then that's fair. I mean, it looked like in Houston, we just saw, like, constant great games out of Harden that we kind of expected it. So that's the only reason why I said Houston. But going back to your point about Seth Curry being a great complement piece to KD and Kyrie, I think that's an understatement, because you have KD, who is the best scorer in basketball. There's no person who could physically match up with him, except maybe Giannis, because they're close in size. But KD gets his shots from anywhere, whether it's three-pointer or at the rim. You foul him, he's basically a 90% free throw shooter. It's unfair to guard him. Oh, and by the way, you have this other guy named Kyrie Irving, who was robbed of the NBA 75th team. That's an argument for another time. He is a winner. No matter what people want to say about him, he's a winner. Look what he did in Cleveland against Golden State. That clutch three-pointer over Steph Curry in game 7 to win the series for Cleveland. He's a winner. He's a 25 point scorer a night, 50% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from free throw shooter last year. He's a bucket. And then you add in shooters like Patty Mills and Seth Curry, who are just knockdown shooters and could get their threes from anywhere, are just great pieces for this Nets team to have. I'm very excited, as you guys could tell. And then you add in Ben Simmons whenever he's ready as an elite defender. He was all defensive teams when last year and the year before.
There's a lot to be excited about, so it's justifiable. And I think Ben Simmons is going to mesh well with this Brooklyn team because there's going to be less pressure for him to score and less pressure for him to feel the need to really elevate his offensive game. He still needs to, but when your teammates are KD and Kyrie, you're not going to, you know, have that need to be dropping 20 points every night. So, and I think that this game was a preview of if the Nets are fully healthy, what they can really do in the postseason. So it was a great day to be a Nets fan and a great day to be a Philly hater. So it was the best of both worlds. But there's another team in the East that I think we need to talk about with a record of 41-27. That's your Celtics, TJ. And I got to tell you, that Jason Tatum, one of my favorite players, man, he is something else. He is so fun to watch. There's a lot to be excited about with this Boston team, too.
Yeah. We all know Brad Stevens took a role in the executive office, and they brought in Ime Udoka. And yeah, the start of the season wasn't anything that we expected from the team. They were very, very streaky on and off. But the All-Star break, that's when everything clicked. They are the hottest team in the NBA right now. They've only lost, I believe, three games since February 1st. So right then and there is what I need to say about the team is Ime Udoka has brought them into what we know as Celtics basketball. Like, it kind of reminds me, like, they're having the success right now. It reminds me of the Big Three with Ray Allen, KG, and Paul Pierce. They're having that much success. And I saw a question or an interview with Udoka, and he had mentioned how he looks to the rafters every time they're in the garden, and he sees all the championships in the past that they've won, the 60s and 70s with Bill Russell, and just seeing all that greatness in the rafters, he uses that as motivation, and I'm sure everybody else on the team does as well. And I'm glad that we can all agree that Jason Tatum is one of the most fun players to watch right now. I feel like he finally has come into his own. He has, I believe, 5 or 6 straight games with 40 plus points. And that's the most by a Celtic in recent history. I could be wrong. But I'm very, very happy with what I'm seeing right now. I think if they can stay healthy, they're going to be a problem. They're going to be a problem in the East. Who that problem is going to be, I don't know. But they've come into a new brand of basketball, and it's that, like, that hard-hitting Boston Celtics offense and defense that we all know and love and opponents hate.
The thing about Tatum that really impresses me is when I watch him play, I think he's the closest thing you could get to Kevin Durant. He scores from anywhere, and he makes it look so easy. And then on defense, he's going to guard your best player night in, night out. And yeah, he's not the best defender on the team. That's Marcus Smart or Robert Williams, but he gives it his all for 48 minutes a night. And when the lights are the brightest, the games matter the most, it seems like he's able to turn up a notch more and elevate his game and his teammates' game more so. We've seen Jaylen Brown take another step in his game. We've seen Marcus Smart actually shooting more consistently as of recently. Robert Williams is proven to be one of the best defensive bigs in the league. Al Horford's having this resurgence of like prime Atlanta Hawks Al Horford again. And then their acquisition of Derek White off the bench is huge. He's a scorer, and he's really helping out give Boston depth off the bench. Jason Tatum, man, if he doesn't get like an all NBA team, like second team or first team, that's robbery, in my opinion, because he deserves it.
Absolutely. I love the comparison to KD because I definitely do see similarities with their game. But, you know, there's just a lot of different storylines for the East. And it's just crazy because we're talking basketball a couple of years ago. It's the West that's loaded. But you look at a lot of these different teams in the East, we got storylines for almost every team.
And on top of it, how we were just talking so highly about the Nets, they're right now an 8 seed. We're talking so highly about Boston. They're only a 5 seed. There's 4 teams better than Boston right now. There's 7 teams better than the Nets right now. There's 50 teams better than the Knicks right now. All jokes aside,
you had to throw that one in there, didn't you?
No, but in all seriousness, the East is just so loaded that the first round matchups are basically going to feel like conference final matchups, because you might see a Philly versus Brooklyn rematch, which I'm sure every single person wants to see. Possibly seven games of Embiid and Kevin Durant, Harden and Kyrie, Ben Simmons playing. I think everyone wants to see that. Boston against Cleveland would be fun. Cleveland's had a heck of a year. Milwaukee, Miami, Toronto's hot as of late. The East is just so loaded.
It's going to be a very exciting playoffs. Even though there's not as much going on in the West, there's still some teams that we're going to have to follow and see what's going on with them. Very, very curious to see what happens with this Memphis team. But yeah, the East has been just something different this year. And you guys are lucky that both of your teams, you can actually have the conversation of the playoffs. I've already called the season for the Knickerbockers a wash. Okay. I mean, there's nothing else to say.
There's only 11 teams ahead of them.
Only 11. Yeah.
My bad. I was a bit off with the 50.
Well,
but not that far off.
No, the way that they're playing, no. But you know what? There are other teams in basketball that I can enjoy watching that, yeah, they're not my favorite team, but there's just so much talent in today's NBA that, yeah, it's good to have a favorite team, but you could get hooked to another team very easily. So
one last thing about the NBA. The Knicks are still mathematically in playoff contention. There's only one team eliminated out of the East, and that's the Magic. So there's still some hope for you, Castle. There's still some hope.
The thread of hope that it's hanging by is thinner than my shoelace. Okay. So, you know, whatever happens, happens. Even though I'm not a fan of them, at least one team from New York, there's hope. So, but speaking of teams from New York, we got a team that we could actually start to think about the season again, and that's baseball. Manfred finally came to his senses. We got a baseball season. Very happy about it. But now it's crunch time. You guys will have to correct me on this. What is it, like 2 weeks of free agency? Something like that.
Spring training games start in a week from today. Or a week from yesterday. Sorry about that.
which is crazy. I mean, but next
Friday we're going to be watching baseball in Florida again, which is great. But for the pitchers, more so, you're going to be seeing rapid deals in the next day or two, and then batter shortly after that, because pitchers need to start throwing again, because there's less than a month until regular season games start.
Yep. So
it's crunch time finally.
And we've seen moves here and there made. I saw Clayton Kershaw's coming back to LA on a 1-year deal. Trade went down today. But what we all want to know is what are Yankees are going to do? Freddie Freeman, I mean, he's a name that's been thrown around, linked to the Yankees. Last night, we were all talking about the tweet about his link to the Dodgers, most likely. What do you guys know in terms of the latest with that? If there is any new news with that.
I've still seen that as of last night. I haven't seen anything new about Freddie Freeman, except for talks were intensifying last night with the Dodgers. But on the Freeman front, I haven't seen anything. But I do want to pick your brains a little bit here. There is a need that the Yankees have to address, and that's the shortstop position. And I'm sure you guys have seen it, but one of the biggest stopgap shortstops on the market right now is Carlos Correa. Do you guys think that Cashman will make a push and try to land Correa? Do we stick with, obviously not Glaber, but Gio or somebody else playing short until we can get one? Or are we going to put all our chips in on Anthony Volpe and fill that gap somewhere until he's ready?
If Brian Cashman ever wakes up from his 10-month-long nap, and if I'm Brian Cashman, what I would do is I would offer Trevor Story a 1 or 2 year deal to be the shortstop of the New York Yankees. He's still a free agent. He's a very solid defensive shortstop. Hit 30 homers. He's a 270 hitter. And then Volpe, you call him up in a year or two when he's ready. You bring back Rizzo and Voit to fill the first baseman need, which it hurts that you couldn't get Freeman, but I really was happy with Rizzo. He was a lefty bat that we needed. Maybe if you're feeling aggressive, you make a trade for Matt Olson from the Oakland Athletics. But Trevor Story is not being talked about enough, and I haven't really seen any buzz about him, which is the perfect opportunity for the Yankees to strike. I don't know what Cashman is waiting for. Does he need like a special invitation to start making moves, because he's been quiet since free agency has picked up again? But Yankees need to do something, because time is running out, and if he doesn't make a move, this season's going to be more of a disaster than last year. And then on top of it, he's going to have to re-sign Judge by next year.
Yeah. I don't know why we haven't jumped on Story yet, or even have. I agree. He's not, you know, he's obviously not someone that's going to make a dramatic change, but he's a solid guy. I like what he's done for the Rockies. I don't know. Cashman, a lot of his moves really make you scratch your head. I mean, Carlos Correa, I mean, yeah, I could see us pursuing him. Cashman likes to get these big names and sign them to ridiculous deals. So I don't know how Yankee fans would feel about that, though. I think we talked about this prior to the show, Josh, but he is coming from the Astros, and we all know what they're famous for. So, you know, I'll go to you, and then TJ, you could harp in. If we end up getting Correa, is it going to, you know, how are fans going to react to that?
See, it's funny because, we were talking about this earlier. I said, you think Correa would want to come to the Yankees just to clear his name from the Houston scandal? And I think it's tough because you don't see Yankee fans booing their own players. I don't know if this would be an exception or not, though. I think it might take time, but if he proves himself to be a valuable asset to this team and not a crutch, then there's absolutely no reason why Yankee fans will be booing him. Same reason essentially why Net fans have been accepting Ben Simmons with open arms. Ben Simmons is the most hated man in Philadelphia and was the most hated man in Philadelphia when he was still on their team. Carlos Correa was involved in the cheating scandal that led to their World Series victory. And ultimately, they beat the Yankees to advance. I don't think Yankee fans will boo him unless if he messes up. And then those boos will be violent. And you'll hear him being Yankee fans wanting to trade him sooner than ever. So I think he's on thin ice if he were to come to the Yankees. But if he proves himself, then it'll be worth it.
Yeah, I agree. And I also want to like bring up too, Correa is definitely a type of player to withstand the media that lies within New York and New York sports. But I do want to backtrack a little bit with Trevor Story. It's funny that we brought him up because I honestly forgot that he was a free agent because there's no buzz around him. And I'm shocked that there isn't, along with you guys. But yeah, that's that. Correa, though, I think if he can prove himself, if he does come to New York, I feel like, I mean, I'm open to him. Like, yeah, what he did with the Astros definitely is not okay by any means, but I don't see Yankee fans being that opposed to it. I feel like if it were to be pulled off, I think it would be a kind of a Ben Simmons deal, like you had mentioned, from like, well, like welcome, we're here now, just make sure you prove yourself. And that's where I lie with at least Correa and now it's Trevor Story.
Yeah, I think both of you make very fair points. I think I'm on the same page. He's definitely someone that can handle the media. And if he does prove himself, then yeah, why not? He fills the void of a need. And, you know, at the end of the day, the number one goal is for the Yankees to have the best season possible. So if that means bringing in a guy who not necessarily the fans like, but is a major need, then I say go for it. But with Cashman's unpredictability, who knows? But the fact that we have baseball, that's the most important thing, that we got a season. We were all definitely not optimistic, but we're back and we got a season. And the opening series is against the Red Sox, I believe. Yep. We might as well just get, you know,
Yankee Stadium against the Red Sox. Mark on your calendars, ladies and gentlemen.
It's going to be one hell of a series, but I'm, you know, point being, we got baseball back. That's all that counts. Manfred becomes a little bit less of a fraud, but he's still on major clown watch. So we'll have to make sure no more shenanigans from him. But before we wrap up the show, it wouldn't be a show with the man of many hats co-hosting if we didn't talk some puck. We're in a prime time of the season right now. So TJ, why don't you give us that breakdown?
Well, I'm very happy with how my team is performing in the second half of the season. I believe Fromm is on the same page with his, but my Bruins, man, let me tell you, at one moment in time before the All-Star break, Bruins Twitter was in arms about the Detroit Red Wings catching the Bruins in the standings. And I laughed at that because I didn't, there's no way that's going to happen. And it's not going to happen anytime soon. But the way that that Bergeron and Marchand are playing with Jake DeBrusk now on the top line, he's coming into his own because we all know, or probably Fromm knows, he requested a trade out of Boston a couple months ago. He still wants out, but he's not being a distraction in the locker room. He's being a team player, which is what we like to see. And the resurgence of David Pastrnak, he's back on being that elite goal scorer. He has 25 goals since January 1st, and that's the most in the NHL. He's now seventh place in all-time Bruins history with career power play goals. And he now has 43 career multi-goal games. And nine of them have come in this season, all since January 1st. So this Bruins team has woken up and become the big bad Bruins that we all know and love in Boston. And they're becoming a scary team again. Like, I don't believe anybody wants to play them in the playoffs. And if they can keep it up and stay healthy, they're gonna be scary. And I can't forget to mention Jeremy Swayman has come into his own as well. He's one of the hottest goalies right now. Definitely top five in heat levels, if you will. Because I know the Rangers got some goalie competition, but not to slander or anything, but I believe it's going to be the two starters out of both the Bruins and the Rangers are in contention for Vezina. And that wouldn't shock me. Fromm, I don't think it would shock you either. But that's my take right now for the Bruins. I hope everything stays peaches and cream. Peaches and cream.
And then the team right above the Bruins in standings would be the Rangers, as they're 2 points ahead right now. Like you said, the Bruins are one of the hottest teams, and there's no denying it. The Rangers are on a bit of a slump right now, but I'm not that worried. The only thing that really concerns me is how young they are, and this is the most important time of the season. But they also have the experience with those young guys because they made the bubble a few years ago, where almost every team, it seemed like, made the postseason. So they got that exposure to playoff hockey. They brought in some vets like a Ryan Reeves and a Barclay Goodrow. Igor Shesterkin, like you said, is probably the best goalie in the league right now and is probably their favorite to win the Vezina because he has the best goals allowed average, best save percentage. He's top three in shutouts, wins, everything you want in a goalie is Igor Shesterkin. And it's even more special just seeing how dominant he's been and just following him when we were students at University of Hartford, going to Wolfpack games to see Igor. And I'm sure Castle could attest to it. It's just special to see, as we knew him to be this minor leaguer, soon to be NHL guy. We never expected him to blow up this quickly, but for him to be a top goalie already is ridiculous. And he's only 25, so he's got plenty of hockey left in him.
I just want to give you some stats real quick. From for shutouts, Swayman and Shesterkin are tied at 3 this season. Swayman's right behind him in second in goals against, and he is about less than a tenth off in save percentage. So I just want to put that out there that it's going to be a tight goalie race, at least for our two teams.
Yes, it will. But I think
it'll win the award. I don't know.
But it'll ultimately go to either one of those two goalies. It's hard to
see unless it goes to Vasilevsky. That's all I can think of being the other favorite for Vezina.
Going back to just talking about Shesterkin quickly, I, you know, don't keep up with the Rangers games as much as you do, Fromm, but very cool to see where we last saw him before he went pro and the success that he's having now. Always a cool thing to follow. And it's going to be very, you know, another set of teams with Boston and New York that come playoff time. It's going to be very interesting. So it's always fun to see that rivalry and the success in multiple sports, not just what we were talking about in basketball or the upcoming series we got in baseball.
Both gardens are going to be rocking. That's for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad both Boston and New York teams out of both hockey and basketball are in playoff contention and could possibly play each other in the playoffs. That's the only thing I can ask for.
Exactly. At least there will be some playoffs going on at the Garden. So I guess I can't complain. But with that being said, we do come to the end of another great episode. As always, thank you for joining us. We want to give our usual shout outs. Shout out to Wild Chat Sports and Kevin for continuing to be a great partner. Always have got a lot of great content. Got a lot of good episodes in the vault, so go and check them out. Also, always shout out to Liberty Shirt Co. Continue to produce great, great shirts. Go check out what they've been up to lately. Shout out to the Mini Man of Hats himself, not only being a great co-host when needed, but continuing to post great content on our social media page. So go check that out and be on the lookout for this next episode. We got a little surprise for an upcoming sponsor that the Three-Pete has just taken on. Don't want to give away too much yet. Just be on the listen for next episode. And maybe we'll dive into a little bit more of that towards the end of next week's show. But as always, thank you again for joining us. Go feel free to listen to us, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you can find us, go listen to us, and we'll see you next week.